course of his work, he's developed an incredible reservoir of knowledge about tools, procedures, goals, projects, outcomes, people, mailing lists. Tom is like truly the gadfly of the collaboration movement. Tom and I actually more or less met each other in 1986 on the Great Peace March for Global Nuclear Disarmament. It's great to see you, and I'm really, really thrilled for you to be here. Thank you.
Peace March was that it started out with this, you know, 1,200 people marching out of LA, and 2 weeks later, it collapsed. And it was abandoned in the desert. All the media and everybody decided it was dead. Most of the people went home. The organization that organized it went bankrupt. And there's 400 people who won't go home, or else they sold their, you know, house and divorced their spouse, and there's nowhere to go. And we're in the middle of the Mojave Desert. And the repo men are coming to take our, you know, vehicles away. And we sat there in a BMX track that was somebody let us sit in for 2 weeks. Lots of talking. And finally got rolling again, but there was nobody in charge. It was a totally hierarchical thing when it started, this massive PR event, mobile PR event. But when it got started again, that whole top layer had been stripped off. And, you know, it's like there, I remember in the middle of Mojave Desert, we had this big tent, and everybody, the 400 people crowded in this tent, and we're trying to figure out what we're gonna do next, and somebody goes, you know, we need a girl to take notes. You know, it's like, it's gonna be a long 9 months. As you know, trying to make the decision of how you're going to make the decisions. But it turned out that our vulnerability was an asset as we moved across the country. It turned out the peace movement, the peace groups in all the towns we were going to visit were scared of this giant monstrosity coming into town. But once we didn't have anything, and suddenly everybody's surging forward to give us support. It's a very interesting lesson to learn. And that was a watershed in my life because it was an experience of living in a totally self-organized community with nobody in charge, no enforcement powers. It was decided right at the beginning that nobody could throw anybody off the march. So how do you enforce anything? And there was an indigenous guy on the march who taught us, a native guy who taught us circles. And that was a miracle to me. We had passed around this big crystal, called the crystal circle. That's what I, you know, how I learned about that technique. And there was a watershed event for me that happened in Colorado, which is a story I write about at the beginning of the book, which is the march is about to come apart over whether we should walk all together so that the media can see how strong and, you know, solid we are, or whether we're going to walk strung out. You know, it's like, nobody can tell me what to do. I want to appreciate nature. You know, I want to stop and talk to the farmers. What is this? And if we're going to do it your way, I'm out of here. So we're in the middle of Colorado, and this thing has been just incredibly divisive for a couple of weeks, and people are getting ready to move on. There's this giant storm. We're setting up our tents in a fertilizer factory lawn. You know, think, where do you put 400 people each day 15 miles down the road? You know, this is not an easy task. So we ended up on the fertilizer factory lawn. And this is June in Colorado, and this storm's like beautiful blue sky, and then, you know, massive storm moves in, and everybody runs into the fertilizer factory. And somebody had the presence of mind to bring in a portable public address system and says, while we're here, why don't we talk about the issue? Let's use the mic as a talking stick. Anybody who wants to say anything about it, talk for 2 minutes, pass it on. So people start passionately speaking into this mic, screaming, tears running down faces, throwing fists in the air, the whole thing. People are sort of jostling, it's hot and crowded, smelly, fertilizer, stacks of chemicals all over the place, rain pounding on the sheet metal roof. And I didn't say anything the whole time, but I noticed with increasing frequency that when I'd be thinking something, within one or two speakers, that would be said. And I began to get this feeling of this big mind, I called it the March mind, that was going, well, if I do it this way, it looks like that. And I was like, no, but if I do it this way, you know, it's like back and forth, trying to make up its mind, going, you know, it's like, and I was embedded in it. It was like this field phenomenon. It wasn't like individuals talking. There was a collective intelligence, a collective wisdom working its way out. And then the storm stopped, and everybody went out to their tents. And I realized that we all knew what we were going to do. We were going to march together in the cities where there were traffic problems and where all the media was. And we were going to march strung out in the country where there wasn't anybody to look at us particularly. And there were, you know, thin sidewalks, you know, along the side of the highways and stuff. You don't want to be three abreast in the middle of the highway. It just made sense. And what really struck me was we never made a decision. Nobody said, I make a motion that X, Y, and Z happen, you know. Nobody said, can I check for consensus? You know, has everybody agreed on this? It was just this emergent thing that made sense. And years later, I was reading this book by Jerry Mander called In the Absence of the Sacred. And in there, he quotes Orrin Lyons, the faith keeper of the turtle clan of the Onondaga Iroquois Indians. And Orrin Lyons says about native councils, we talk until there's nothing left but the obvious truth. And I went, that's it. I was there. I did it, you know. I'd never experienced it before, and the native people were doing it all the time. It's like, what is this? And that became this, you know, high watermark, whatever, this mark of what the ideal kind of group process is. And it's something that's, group process is too small a term to embrace what happened there. And there are lots of other things happen on the march too, and there's a number of stories on my website about it. But we called it the magic of the march. And people would come on the march to, like, reporters. There was this one reporter who came to report on us and stayed for like 2 months. She's going, something's going on here. Something's up. For us, we felt all divided and upset, but there was some magic that could be tasted by anybody who bumped into it. And I think I'm curious. I won't make any assumptions. How many people here believe that in well done group process under the right conditions, there's something that feels like magic and that feels like wisdom that happens? Okay. So, and that, of course, in the vast majority of people I speak to, I don't get anywhere near that kind of response to a question like that. And that magic is now becoming hot property. There's a really interesting magazine. I recommend you all get this month's copy of What is Enlightenment magazine. Very interesting group that puts this together. If you want to find people who are on a spiritual path which has this magic as one of its core pieces. And this is specifically about the power of collective intelligence. And they have this long article covering many, many dimensions of this magic. You can go to wie.org, What is Enlightenment? These folks believe enlightenment is part of the evolutionary thrust of the whole universe, and that enlightenment itself is evolving. So their question, what is enlightenment, is a serious question. There's another excellent website called the Collective Wisdom Initiative. I think it's collectivewisdominitiative.org, which they also refer to in there, which comes out of the Fetzer Institute. And they are charting our whole movement They have like 400 people there. They interviewed like, you know, 40, 50 people. You can go put up, you can go add your name to the list and put up your bio in there, and, you know, answer the questions, become part of that movement. It's a really interesting group of people. And we know a tremendous amount about this. And Sam's work and the work at the of the community at work is a big part of that. I remember when I first encountered the handbook for facilitators, the participatory decision making, and has this map of what happens with the grown zone in it. You know, what happens in the evolution of a group as it starts to wrestle with an issue, and that was total revelation for me. It was like, again, this sense, like the Oren Lyons quote, "Been there." You know, this really describes something I've seen. What I want to do, and it's not quite what Sam would like me to do tonight, maybe, but which is the core of my interest, is asking, what does this magic have to do with the problems we face as a planet? That's my inquiry, and that's what my book is primarily about. There is a deep kind of ethical sensibility that people get when they are really hearing each other, when they're really being authentic, when there is diversity in the room that is being authentically encountered. There's something that is like wise, moral, real, important that happens in a group. That is what should be governing our decision making. That is what should be governing our politics and our governance. The sector of the society that I am particularly interested in is the politics and governance. We are watching right now the power of politics and governance in restructuring our society. The decisions that are made, the game rules upon which businesses and individuals, you know, live their lives and do their work, are decided primarily at the government level and in the political discourse. And I want to give you my bottom line. What to me is the thing that is my litmus test. I say, it can some process or institution address this problem? And if it can, then I pay more attention to it than if it can't. How many of you are aware of Bill Joy's article in the April 2000 Wired magazine? Three or four, okay. Write it down. Bill Joy plus Wired plus April 2000. You can find a link to it on my site also. If you look for Bill Joy on my site, you'll bump into it. The article, if I recall correctly, is entitled "Why Nature Doesn't Need Us."
You circulated.
Yes, I circulated that. I've referred to it a number of times. Bill Joy is one of the co-founders of Sun Microsystems. Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. He's one of the high-tech gurus. He's their chief scientist, and he wrote this article, which was wildly controversial, partly because it has no—he names a gigantic problem that has no obvious answer. And Bill Joy, the thesis of this article is the developments in biotechnology, nanotechnology, robotics, and computing power will result in the capacity of small groups or individuals being able to create self-replicating entities in the physical environment, the way computer viruses are in the computer environment, in such a way that ultimately human extinction is guaranteed by that. And that the timing of that is in the decades. He doesn't know how many decades. But once an individual or small group can generate destructive self-replicating entities, we can't manage it anymore. There's too many individuals and small groups in the world. Even if one millionth of the people in the world are actually nuts enough to do that, that's still thousands and millions of people. You know, there's so many people in the world. So he's going, what do we do with this? And many people argue, well, no, this can't be done, or it's too far in the future, whatever. Most of the people in the know say, well, it really is conceivably possible. You can decide how you want to deal with the trade-offs now, but what he's saying is a realistic possibility. Who decides which way we go with this? You know, where are these decisions made? So for me, and it's like each one of these technologies comes with its long list of benefits. It's not as if this is a simple decision. Plus, how are you supposed to control it? You know, what does this mean? No scientific development? Are we talking about no more science? Anybody who tries to practice science, we're going to put them in prison? You know, it's like, what does this mean? It's a giantly powerful inquiry. It's so powerful and so puzzling. Hardly anybody deals with it. Every now and then in Wired magazine, there's a little article that says, why isn't anybody talking about what Phil Joy said? You know? I was talking, oddly enough, about 2 weeks ago to intelligence agencies. I've never dreamed I'd ever be talking to intelligence agencies. There's a whole movement for open source intelligence. You know, it's a really interesting connection. I'm talking with them, I asked them, how many of you know about this? Two hands out of 100 people. It's like, these are the intelligence agents. I had interesting points to make on that. So that's my litmus test. If we had a way to handle that, there's no problem that we couldn't address. If there was some way to handle that thing. I want to tell you that the closest thing I know to address something like that, which is still like Kitty Hawk. You know, we're really advanced over what we are, but we're at Kitty Hawk in terms of what we need. But in Denmark, there's a really interesting process called a consensus conference. And in Denmark, when the parliament is faced with, the Danish parliament is faced with some highly complex, highly technical, highly controversial technical issue, they have a special office that they say, please gather together for us 15 Danes who know nothing about this topic and whose diversity represents the diversity of Denmark. Educate them on this topic and have them tell us what they think should be done. We may or may not follow it, but we're interested in finding out. So this office will pick these 15 Danes, and they have an oversight committee made of the experts from across the political spectrum who make sure that everything's fair. So the briefing information that's given to these citizens is ensured, guaranteed to be balanced because they're watched over by this steering committee. And then they have, they study for 2 weekends, these 15 Danes study up on the issue, and they discuss with the organizers what questions they have and what experts could possibly answer their questions. And the experts that are called are from across the spectrum. Across the spectrum, you have the Greenpeace guy and the Monsanto guy. You know, you're dealing with genetic engineering of foods, which happens to be the most popular subject in terms of people doing consensus conferences, you know, examining genetic engineering of foods. And after they collect up, figure out who the experts are, they have a public forum. And up there on the stage, you know, where I am in the position of power, are the citizens. This row of 15 citizens. And out there are the experts who are coming up to talk to them and to testify to them. And they're all surrounded by the public and the interest groups and the media are there. It's an open public forum. So the first day, the experts do their presentations, and then the citizens go off in a corner and talk together and go, what do we want to ask them tomorrow? And the next day, they cross-examine them. Hey, you Greenpeace guy, you said this. And you PR person from Monsanto, you said that. What's going on here? You know, what's going on with you guys? After they have talked to the experts, they are taken off and facilitated to a consensus statement of what should be done, you know, what the parliament should do on this issue. And then next day there's a big press conference. They issue it to the public, and on some issues, the parliament, this office of parliament, will organize discussion groups around the country about whatever they came up with. Hello? Like, what issue could not be addressed this way? In fact, what issue isn't highly technical and complex? Mm-hmm. Housing, drugs, you know, gay marriage, you know, what doesn't have thousands of opinions and pieces of information you need to consider, you know? That, to me, is, I sit that, on one side we have Bill Joy, on the other side we have consensus conferences. Consensus conferences aren't quite enough to handle what Bill Joy is talking about, but they're way far ahead of everything else. And, you know, I love to talk about what the ins and outs, why this is so special, what makes it different, and it's featured in my book. But I want to communicate very definitely that this, at this point, that's the central thing I'm promoting in my work, is this kind of council, and hundreds of them have been used around the world, particularly in a form called the citizen jury. But there's a variety of them. I call them citizen deliberative councils. Some people say citizen panels. There's ways that have been talked about, which I describe on my website, to plug them into the political process in powerful ways. Right now, you've had an election. You have a new governor. You know. Imagine a randomly selected group of people who are interviewing all the candidates for governor and who are hearing from people who support them and oppose them and who then rate these candidates for governor. Imagine then that the candidates for governor are listed on the ballot in order of the rating. Imagine that discussions of the pros and cons of the candidates by this randomly selected group of people are put in the voter information booklet. Imagine if every ballot initiative had to pass through a citizen jury or a consensus conference, and the results of that are put into the voter information booklet and on the web and written up in the newspapers and passed around in the email networks. You know, this is an effort to take the quality of group process that we know is possible and the magic and wisdom which is potentially there, feed it with real, solid, good, full-spectrum information, and get public judgment and public wisdom out of it, and then empower that in our political and governmental process. So I want to sort of put a brackets around that. You know, we go from the power of group that we know is there, the magic can be created in group, the weird situation we find ourselves in the 21st century, in terms of the kinds of problems that we're facing. And then plugging those, combining those two, and making a totally different kind of democracy. That's the key thesis of the book that you have in front of you. There's tons more to it, but that's the core of it. If you want to have the results of such a council come alive in the larger public, you need widespread dialogue. So it's a way in which you could say, okay, it's like Congress, it happens over here and nobody even pays attention to it. You could set up a system like that. But ideally, and this is also in the book, we want a culture of dialogue. We want, you know, the open space conferences and future search conferences and study circles and all this stuff. There's like more than 100 of them listed in the book. There's so much excellent work being done in this. And you want that plugged into this higher level, you know, the sort of microcosm dialogues at the top that are, people are, the highly concentrated, high quality information and reflection going on. One of the things I would like to refer to you to along those lines is Let's Talk America. I think it's letstalkamerica.org, it may be letstalkamerica.com. Let's Talk America is a campaign that has Ethne Reader involved in it. It has National Council on Dialogue, National Coalition on Dialogue and Deliberation, a number of other organizations in it. And it is a giant conversation attempting to organize millions of people this year across the political spectrum to talk about what is democracy and do we have a democracy? What's the quality of our democracy? What kind of democracy do we want? What's going on here? and to reduce the polarization. They're picking democracy as a topic because it's something, theoretically, we all believe in. But we all have some different ideas about it. So reduce the polarization so people encounter each other as real people. Get a renewed commitment to democracy on many, many people's parts. And give people an experience of high-quality dialogue. You know, when I talk to people about these citizen councils, they go, you're going to put a committee of randomly selected people in charge? I mean, just look, you look at the people I meet on the street, you know. Put them, and then they combine person I see on the street with committee. They go, forget it. I don't give those people any power. You know. So I want to invite you to look at the fact that we, facilitator process people, have our hands on something that can heal and transform the world. And that there's a very real possibility that if we don't use that in the right ways, the world will not be healed and transformed and will tear itself apart because it's well on the way to doing that. So I'm being here as a missionary rabble-rouser among the process people to see yourselves, ourselves, as an incredible resource and to point out the challenge that we have to plug in this magic that we know about into the society in ways that will actually deal with the problems that we're facing. And along those lines, I want to invite you all to join the National Coalition for Dialogue and Deliberation, which has a great website, thataway.org. Which way is the new civilization? Thataway. That's why the woman who created it chose that. And on that website, if I had thought about it early enough, I would have arranged to get one of these computers and project up on the wall and taken you on the tour of the NCDD, National Coalition for Dialogue and Deliberation, wiki. How many here know what a wiki is? A few. A wiki is a website, a web page that anybody who encounters it can change. Right. Not only that, it's really easy to make links. You write dialogue and deliberation as one word with a lot of internal capitals in it, you know, D-A-D, dialogue and deliberation, instantly becomes a link. The wiki automatically makes an empty page for it. You click on the little question mark that shows up at the end and it takes you to the empty page. You write whatever you want on it. And you could do that anywhere you want in it. And then anytime dialogue and deliberation shows up, instantly it links to all the other, you know, to that page. You know, what we could do if we took all our knowledge about process and all the books we have and all the experiences we've had, you know, open space, okay, who likes open space, who doesn't, where does it work, where doesn't it, what's the stories about it working or not working, what are the little hints about it, all could be linked to an open space page really easily. Anybody can show up. Somebody can say, hey, I don't think that's what open space is, erase that part of the black. Write it over again, you know, the little battles to change it back and forth, you know. But it keeps a track record. You erase something, there's a track record there. Somebody can come and put it back, whatever. It's a living, incredible resource, and it now has almost 200 processes listed on it. And not all of them have their pages filled out. So go to the NCDD Wiki site. It's wiki-thataway.org. W-I-K-I, wiki.thataway.org. You don't have to participate if you don't want. Just go read the pages. You know, there is no other list that's as long. Nowhere on the web is there anything remotely as long as 200 processes. And people who are connected to this group here have put that together. I was one of them, as much other people too. And it came because we stumbled across an Australian site that had 62 processes listed with incredibly detailed descriptions and references and all
examples and all that. And we asked them if we could steal it and make it into a wiki. And they said, sure. So we built up the rest of it. So all the stuff that's on my site, I mean, my site used to be this big comprehensive site. Forget it. You know, that's lots of interesting theory and stuff. But if you're looking for processes, go to the wiki site. That's now home base. And any process that you have that's not on it, put it up. If we're all together making it, there's just, good heavens, I mean, my mind boggles, I don't know. Not only that, but there are sections where you can compare processes. This is strong in this is weak in that, you know, how do they match up? There's sections to talk about what are the underlying principles that make these things work or not. You know, principles of facilitation, principles of design, process design, you know. This, I can't say enough. Anyway, you got it. The National Coalition for Dialogue and Deliberation, I think of as the organizing space for us as professionals, scholars, activists in this realm. And they have a great conference coming up in October. Sign up for it. The other piece, another piece of the picture is all these people who've experienced the magic. They come to these events, they get their zap, they get their high. I think at public events, you know, I don't work that much with corporate in the corporate world. You know, this is, I don't know, this may or may not apply in the corporate world. I think about the people who are on the consensus conferences and the citizen juries, the people who are in the, you know, cafes, the, you know, conversation cafes and stuff. The vast majority of them are deeply moved by what happened. It turns out the vast majority of people on juries process, good heavens, juries have horrible process. A lot of them, you know. But people have never experienced the level of citizenship like that, you know. So they come up, they resisted getting on it, but once they get on it, they were very moved by what happened. What about all those people? What about them getting the idea that this thing that they just did could be a governing force in our society? And they go, wait a minute, you know, I'm looking at Congress, I'm going, wait, something's wrong here. What we did was so much better than what I see there, you know. So that trying to organize them is a whole nother dimension. And I want, the last little story I want to give is a, what's called a wisdom council. I have over there some materials on Jim Ruff and his dynamic facilitation, and he created this idea of wisdom council. It's very much like citizen jury, except you have a randomly selected bunch of people, but they're not dealing with an issue. This is like the State of the Union address for a country or community. Imagine a couple of dozen randomly selected Americans, and they're going to be talking together with this magic, in a really magic process. Dynamic facilitation really does, it's an open-ended, non-linear, very magic process. And they are going to come up with what they think is going on in the United States, how they feel about it. And it's, imagine it being official. Just let your imagination fly. Imagine a constitutional amendment that says, we the people are going to speak every year. Each year, a new randomly selected group picked 3 or 4 days. They're going to talk about what's going on in the country, how they feel about it, what they think about the direction. And then they're going to have a massive press conference. You know, of course, there's massive publicity. Who gets picked for this? Really important. You know, so the lottery goes around. People are picked, you know. And then their statements, like the president's State of the Union address. But everybody knows the president's talking, you know, out of his politics. These people won't be talking out of their politics. They're going to be talking out of their hearts. And out of their experience, what it's like being in America. That's we the people up there at the top. You know, it doesn't have any power. Ha ha ha. You know? So that's the model of a wisdom council. And we did one, of the best experiment so far was done in the Rogue Valley, Oregon. Southern Oregon, Ashland, and Medford in that area. And we ended up, since this is not already a recognized thing, we ended up with only 70 people, or seven people after we randomly selected 80 people, called them all, and out of that we end up with 7 people who can make it finally when the day arrives. They talk for 2 days with Jim Ruff facilitating them. They get all fired up on themselves as we the people, they go talk at the end of the Sunday where they, you know, they finish their deliberations and they show up to a community gathering, which because it's new, there's like 60 or 80 people there. They go, "Where are we the people? We gotta take care of our own lives. We gotta make things happen, you know, rah, 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 rah." It's like this populist gathering and all the people are getting wow, 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 and they let's get in little circles and talk about what they came up with, and each little circle has one of the members of the Wisdom Council. We have all this on video, it's just electrifying. And I'd read their statement. When their statement came out, I go, "Oh my God, this is not a very good statement. What's gonna happen in the community gathering?" I was totally blown away. I had no idea. I mean, I heard Jim talk about this creates a we the people. I go, "Yeah, right, Jim." You know, this was as important an event in my life as the fertilizer factory story. It's like, here is a totally different level of a collective entity was there. A collective entity called we the people that was created out of diverse people encountering each other, really talking authentically and going, "There's nobody else here but us chickens. We're in charge. We've got to be in charge. How are we going to be in charge? Let's get on with it." High energy kind of thing. After that, I thought, this is going to snowball. You know, ideally you have every 6 months or something, you have another Wisdom Council in the community. The organizers were exhausted pulling this together. It was just three guys who had heard Jim and me on the radio. It's actually two guys and a woman. But they didn't have any expertise in this. They just said, "Hey, let's try and do this," and they did it. They were wiped out from the effort. We didn't have the resources to have an organizer there to keep it going, and it fizzled out. But it's like those people adequately channeled, "Oh, you know, this is something to be reckoned with," you know. And they knew they were to be reckoned with. They talked that language. But there was no they. There was no them. It was just all us. It was a big, powerful us. You know, really solid. So those are the pieces of the picture that I want to paint. And I want to check with you. I feel like we know the group process stuff. We're very advanced in our group process stuff. We're at Kitty Hawk when it comes to political design, integrating this with our politics. We're way behind in public awareness. The public is not demanding dialogue and deliberation. They don't even know it from Adam. So what are we, what are you, what do we do with the idea that we have a critical role to play? I mean, is this real to people? You know, is this, I've painted a few ways it might be. But those are my answers to the question. To me, the question is more important, the inquiry. You know, those of us who know process stuff, those of us for whom it's really real, those of us who are aware of what's going on in the world, what's the marriage of those two? You know, I'm at this point, I feel like it makes sense to do a little question and answer. You can strip off the top layer and or create a crisis, like in a community where there's sudden crises and it's more than the official powers that be can handle. Some communities end up coming together and everybody's helping each other and it's just this miracle thing. You know, talk about the blackout in New York and everybody's helping each other, blah, blah, blah. You know, and other communities tear themselves apart. You know, the absence of the top is a condition that supports both of those. That's the point. What are the conditions that when you remove the top, the bottom comes alive? Mm-hmm. And it feels like that's our work. We need to put the conditions in place so as the crises build, they generate people coming. That was what we were trying to do with Y2K. You know, we thought everything's gonna come apart. It looked to us like everything was gonna come apart, you know. And it was like using Y2K for personal and social transformation. I didn't want to try to just keep everybody alive or help people hole up with their guns. It's like when things come apart, if certain things are in place, that's the point. What do they call it in chaos theory? You know, the
strange attractor.
It's the bifurcation point.
You know, that's the point where there's a choice that's built into the system, and it's going to go this way. It's going to go this way. If we really hustle our bunnies, you know, by the rollover, it'll go this way instead of that way, you know. So I feel the same thing with Y2K. Even Y2K was a knock on the door, you know. There's poundings on the door, there's kickings on the door, the door's still there. And our us taking our work seriously, not just as a career path, but as a mission in the world, you know, if we can get this out there, work at the bottom, work at the top, work wherever, and work together so that there's a sense of strategy and movement and, you know, we, who's the we, you know, not just isolated, separate, but a we. So I agree that it's potent and possible, but it's not guaranteed unless we set the conditions. And even then, it's not guaranteed.
You know, I just don't think it takes a crisis to start doing it.
Oh, it doesn't.
I think not if you start, even if you're in a corporate context, I've had that experience where people, it doesn't maybe last or something, but once they've gone through a certain process, they don't forget it.
Right.
Then they want it some other way, or they don't know how.
Absolutely,
they're more
agree.
Open.
There's a way in which, if there weren't things like the things Phil Joy is talking about, I would go. If I felt we had lots of time, you know, I would say, yes, anything we do in this subject is great, and will build. It will build. Mm-hmm. And we have no idea where. The fact that we may have limited time makes me go, as well as doing everything, we have to think what just might have more leverage than something else and try and do that way. The systems that we're embedded in change the significance of what we're doing and create obstacles or opportunities, depending on how the system's designed. I remember in my first open space conference, the first session I went to, it was about collaborative process. And the guy who was running it said, I've been collecting collaborative process processes, and you can look, check them out in my loose leaf binder over there. And I've been trying to bring the spokespeople for collaborative process together to create new collaborative processes, but they won't come together because that's my proprietary knowledge. And I can't afford to let this go out and get changed and all that. And so the guy who's running the session says, so I had done a bunch of work myself to create, you know, the coherent thing that brings a lot of these together. And I'll tell you a bit about it, but I don't want you to take notes because it's, you know, I'm going to be right making a living with it. I got this splitting headache. You know, and the focus on the little piece.
Right.
How many people know Escher's work? This
yeah.
weird etching. Etchings, yeah. You know this?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There's a guy once who did, he put up one of these on a overhead projector, and then he takes a piece of paper with a little hole in it. And this is one of these things where the water goes like this and then starts over again without ever going down, you know. And it's a picture, it's an optical illusion, a detailed, wild picture. And he puts this paper on with the hole in it and he says, this makes sense. And this makes sense. And this makes sense. You know, it only doesn't make sense if you look at the whole picture.
Right.
And I would invite you to take a look at the systems you're embedded in the larger picture, and take a look at your whole, what's going on in the world, and at your life, and whatever. Point out that there are different processes that are more relevant in some categories than in other categories. And if we want to have multi-process programs that actually build capacity within the community to deal with all the things that it encounters, we need some kind of full spectrum sensibility. And part of that is the built structures. You know, we need places to meet. You know? And there are high quality places to meet and there's crummy places to meet. You know, and there's places for different kinds of dialogue, etc. And I don't think the National Council for or Coalition for Dialogue and Deliberation is just one more organization. I think it is intentionally a big umbrella. All the people in corporate, you know, work, all the people who are doing conflict resolution, all the people who are doing bone dialogue for spiritual and philosophical enlightenment, you know, all the people who are doing, you know, democratic deliberation, they're all welcomed in that big tent. And they're all, I went to the first conference, there were 220 people, that was the maximum they could have. There were people who couldn't come. I got in, And I've been in this work for more than a decade, and there were 7 people I knew.
Wow.
You know, this is not the choir. This is something bigger that's happening, multiple choirs finding each other in this movement. Simple definition of co-intelligence is the opposite of co-stupidity. Most people don't know what co-intelligence is. Everybody knows what co-stupidity is. It would be hard for media to ignore, particularly if it's established and legitimated in some way, a voice that is inclusive, an inclusive we the people. Not the we the people that was in the streets when the war began. You know, that's a one-sided we the people. But we the people that includes the wide spectrum of voices. It becomes, and I would hope that as a movement builds around this, there will be demand for people to say, if the media isn't covering it, why aren't you covering it? You're supposed to be serving the community. And once those get empowered, they can do things like monitor the FCC, which is part of the machinery that's making all this happen that way. In its one place in Canada in 1991, and this story is described, the whole chapter in my book is about this, where this magazine, which is the Time Magazine of Canada, convened these 12 people who represented the diversity of Canada. They were scientifically selected by a polling firm and said, what should the future of Canada be? And there's 40 pages of coverage in this magazine about this. Unbelievable. You know, so this is an example of what you're talking about. These folks thought of this as a media exercise, not as a democratic innovation, which is the tragedy.
So what's been the longitudinal?
This is 91.
This is 1991.
So, how did it unfold?
How did it unfold?
Well, based on, what they say, and here we are 15 years later.
Yeah, well, there's a little history to this that I hired somebody to dig up. I looked at this and said, how could this not have transformed Canada? Somebody must have suppressed it. The fact is, all the people, I hired an friend who's an investigative reporter to talk to the people involved. This had Roger Fisher, who was the Getting to Yes co-author, was the main facilitator who was trying to get something to happen. But it wasn't so much his success as the success of a couple of women who were participants who made the ultimate breakthrough that was needed. But what happened afterwards was that a lot of people were talking about, there's 4 pages of their recommendations to the country in here, and this has a blow-by-blow account of what happened. And a lot of people talked about it, and people wanted to do more of this kind of thing, and a couple other forums were made that brought in, that included politicians. The politicians were feeling they were losing control of the scene, and they started to diss all this kind of process. And it sort of died out. But it planted a seed, and today in Ontario, both in Toronto and a number of other cities and province-wide, they're using citizen juries to analyze budgets. And in British Columbia, there's like 120 some odd citizens chosen at random who are studying the process of elections, and what they come up with will be submitted to the public as a initiative, and if it's decided, that's the way elections are going to be held in British Columbia from then on. So Canada is, these things, it's like you were saying, there's little things that happen that seem to fail, and then something else, the peace march fell apart, and then, we don't know how these things work. Overwhelmingly, these things are events. We do an open space event, we do a future search event, we do a deliberative event. This needs to be part of the process. What would it be like to vote for a president and then never vote again? It's absurd, It needs to be part of the whole process and designed in.
Here we are in another election year, and we're all getting polarized, and we're all trying to get out the vote for our side. And I think we're falling into the same trap. Why are we not having discussions and dialogues from all sides about what really is democracy and what is the democratic process and what do we all want for a country and what is a fair way of electing our leaders and what do we do when we feel that there's something unclear in the process or if it's so close that it's not clear that it really is the will of the people and maybe there's something we should do about that.
As a lifelong activist who was born in a socialist family and has always been peace movement, environmental movement, stuff like that, I still have those responses in me, but there's another me that's forming up, which goes, we can't win that way. You know, we need to change the whole game so that it's not positions that are winning, but it's life that's winning, and life is alive and changes and shifts, and is, you know, as things change, the positions are killing us as positions. And I keep thinking of Gandhi, what Gandhi did to the British. When the British shot people, beat people, put people in prison, it used to work. And Gandhi changed the game. So when they shot people and beat people and put into prison, it backfired. You know, we have the opportunity to change the whole game structure so that when they do the stupid things, it backfires. Because there is a we the people, there is a wisdom that's obvious now, you know, that kind of thing. That's something like that. I think we have the opportunity, each one of us who sort of goes, wait a minute, to the whole political process as it exists, and goes, let's build a dialogic political process that moves beyond these positions, and sort of what can we create together is the core of it. One of the things I've been living with, the power of high quality conversation in empowering the movement that's on our side, and the power of high quality conversation to include all the sides. These are both, and in a funny way we have to do both of them right now, but ultimately I'd love to dissolve the sides and stop viewing the sides totally.
The danger you're talking about seems so real, so compelling, of what could happen if we don't get to this possibility you're talking about of wisdom society. I'm just curious, what's the, like, the main obstacle that you serve? What's the force that's going to keep it from happening? It seems so almost obvious we need to get there. But what do you see as, like, or anybody, the what are we looking at that's the barrier? What's going to keep us from getting there?
I mean, the biggest thing that I know, and it's not an easy answer, because I feel this is a slim chance that we're going for here, is a book called New World, New Mind, that describes the way our cognitive systems, our minds and our nervous systems and our perception systems have not changed in 10 or 20,000 years. Way back in the 10 or 20,000 years ago, we were in the, you know, fighting the mammoths and, you know, beating somebody over the head who came to attack us. We know how to deal at that level. The threats we face, our body minds can't encounter. Paul Ehrlich was one of the authors of this. He's the population bomb guy, the original, hey everybody, the population is exploding. And the other guy, I can't remember his name, but he's one of the leading cognitive psychologists. The threats of new technologies, the threats of global nuclear war, the threats of, you know, derivatives, you know, it's like all these weird, abstract, quote-unquote, things. Global warming, you know, is the new weather mean the climate's changing? We can't perceive climate, we can perceive weather. You know, we're not built to encounter it. So we have to create collective systems to encounter those things on our behalf. But the collective systems, we as citizens, there's a chapter in my book called Citizenship Meets Complexity with two X's. And complexity is complexity that's getting more complex, you know, that's almost infinitely complex. And our democracy is democracy to the extent that it exists, even if we didn't have the corporate control of it, you know, even if the media was totally ours. How do I, as a citizen, encounter these problems? You know, I pick sides. I get some nonprofit to fight it out for me. You know, it's like, this isn't really citizenship. How do we really have wisdom that engages this? And that's one of the reasons I like the Citizen Deliberative Council idea as a way to do that. But the Citizen Deliberative Council is an abstract idea. You know, it's like, how do you play that game? I know something in there is, for me, the biggest obstacle. And because people are living with those limitations, they live by the limited experience they have. So when a citizen initiative review is proposed in Oregon to have by the guy who does citizen juries, and he says he's talking to Opio, he has Opio independent money, he's going to try and push this to himself, so that every initiative is going to be reviewed by a citizen jury. And he's talking to the various players, and he talks to the guy who's head of the AFL-CIO, And the head of guy who's the head of the AFL CIO says, sounds like a great idea, but I don't think we can support it because we do pretty well in, you know, in the process, the system, the way it's set up, you know.
Is there,
get beyond it.
So is there a closing comment or message that you'd like to make, and then I'm going to do a little formal closing?
Yeah, it's the same message I had halfway through. There is, and it's a generic message, you know, it's like, and then it's a, the metaphor is in my book also, and I did this during a Y2K speech, I came up with this metaphor, you know, the atom, the power, all the power that's in an atomic weapon is in every single atom, you know. It's just a particular arrangement that is made that then can blow up a city. And the power that is going to counter that is the power of people, you know. The people in this room, in the proper arrangement, would have the power to generate the wisdom and transformation that's needed. It's true of virtually any room, you know. The more diverse the room, the more power there is, in the proper arrangement, in the right interactions. And trying to carry that with you and go, what is my role? Since we start with the individual, unfortunately, our society is grounded in the individual. What is my role in something bigger that I, with others, am going to have to create this something bigger that I can be part of that could then have the power to make the changes that are necessary? And I think you guys have that power because you're process people. I really believe that. I believe dialogue and deliberation, high quality dialogue and deliberation is key and has to be done, put in the right place and arranged. So it's the ways we've been talking. So I appeal to you. You are being called by life itself to save it. Save the world as a playing field so we can do all the other groovy things we're doing.
Okay, thanks everybody for coming out.